Thank you so much for inviting me. So I'm happy that my talk made it on time. I've been a little sick the last few days, so I couldn't unfortunately be here earlier and had to teach yesterday. Anyway, so I'd like to introduce my co-authors, Jirka, Simonek, and Jan Hopmans. Jan just came in the room. Busy as president, I guess. So title, Iterative Research Cycle, Process-Based Model Data Evaluation in Fatal Zone Research. And I like to go back to the iterative research cycle, and that is a hypothesis formulation. In much of what we do, our hypothesis constitutes a numerical model, which embodies basically everything we know theoretically about the system that we study. Once we have our hypothesis, we have to set up an experimental design, because we go to a new fatal zone system, and we need some measurements to test our hypothesis. Then, if we have an experimental design, we can do some data collection. Once we have the data, we can confront our hypothesis, which is a numerical model, with the data, which is the model data analysis step. And then, ultimately, what we like is this last step, and that's hypothesis refinement. But in the literature, you will find very few papers that have successfully been able to complete that last step. Most papers stop at the model data analysis and write, including my own papers, the model fits the data reasonably well. At the moment, it doesn't fit the data. This and this could be a reason. And then you send it in and it gets published. But scientifically, what's most interesting is that last step. That's a hypothesis refinement, because that's where you actually learn something useful. Otherwise, at the end, when you start with model data analysis, you still have the model you started with. So you didn't learn anything, really. It becomes an engineering approach then. So this is the example. This is a tree. We like to describe the water continuum here from infiltration in soil, uptake by plant roots, then through the tree, and then all the way transpiration through the leaves, back to the atmosphere. So we can set up here an axisymmetrical model. Then we come up with an experimental design. Then we compare our model. In this case here, I plot the SEP flux simulated by the model in red, and then the dots there are the data. And what you see here is you see that the model describes the diurnal patterns nicely, but what you do see, at daytime and nighttime, you see that the model is not able to perfectly describe the data, particularly the daytime, the highest fluxes, the model cannot capture. And so now, I like to have a methodology that tells me, if I see that systematic mismatch at daytime, I want to know which part of my model do I need to refine. Because much of this has been completely subjective. Yeah, we can look at this and think, oh, this process is not included, so let's add this to the model, let's redo this whole thing then, and let's see where we get. But science is where we have a methodology that tells us exactly, we analyze the residuals, and then that methodology tells us, this is where you need to change your model. That component of your model is wrong. That process in your model is not correctly specified. So that's much of the work that we're trying to do, detecting what we call epistemic errors. Now, the model data fusion problem, unfortunately, why is that so complicated? Because parameters are uncertain, our input variables are uncertain, our state variables are uncertain, we have a model structure itself that is uncertain, and all this produces new state variables that are uncertain, and outputs, fluxes, and other variables that are uncertain. Now, we also have observations of the system that are uncertain. So ideally, we like to merge the two and come up with a procedure that can give us all of these six different error sources. And this is the one that we're most interested in. This is the epistemic error, the error in this equation. Because if I'm able to figure out what the error is at the equation, I can come up with a new equation, and then I can say I learned something scientifically instead of just fitting the model to the data, because you're not learning anything then really. And so to infer the model structural error, you need to take explicit consideration of all these individual error sources. Otherwise, all the error is going in the model structure, whereas in reality, there's a lot of error in the input data as well. So this has been a complicated problem for many, many years. So the Bayesian approach, Thomas Bayes introduced the Bayesian approach, where this is Bayes' law. I quickly go over Bayes' law. This is my posterior of A. Now let's consider that A are the parameters of our model, or A is our hypothesis, could be a model plus parameters. B is the data that we collected, and that's what we call posterior, is equivalent to the prior of the hypothesis, so the, our prior belief in the hypothesis, times something we call the likelihood function or conditional probability, and we divide that by what we call the efference. This efference is required so that this thing integrates, the posterior integrates to one, so that's a formal probability distribution. Now, the efference we can remove, and we'll end up with something that looks like this. Now, we can assume a prior distribution for our hypothesis. That's not so difficult. The crux is the likelihood function. Which likelihood function do we select? Now, then the question then is, how do we estimate this? Now, we can estimate this using Markov chain Monte Carlo methods. These are statistical methods. We've developed those. They're available. They can handle very high dimensional parameter spaces, run in parallel, efficient methodology. So the methodology is there, the computational methodology. So then let's implement it. I show here a simple watershed example because that illustrates my point best. It's just a simple rainfall runoff model. And this model has 7 parameters. So now I apply Bayesian inference to this and I get something like this. Very typical result. So what do we see here? Here we see stream flow and the data is with the dots and the blue line is the model result. So this appears to look very nice from a distance. Of course, you need to look in at individual days, but it looks pretty okay. But if you look at the residual distribution, you see that they violate all the principles, all the properties that we assumed when we derived the likelihood functions. For instance, residuals, their standard deviation does not increase with increasing magnitude of the output of the model. You see that it's generally increasing. Now, here what you see is that the residuals are not Gaussian. This is what we assumed and this is what's really going on. You see also here that the residuals are autocorrelated, which means based on the current residual, I can predict what the next residual is. That's typically an indication of forcing error and a structural error. So we did something wrong here. Now, we try another likelihood function, something we call a generalized likelihood function. It's more extensive. Run this likelihood function and what do you see now? You not only fit the data, but you also have error residual distributions that whose statistical properties are consistent with the assumptions we made when we derived the likelihood function. Now, a statistician would be very happy now and would say, okay, we're done. But now the central question is, did we learn anything? We fitted the data, we get exactly what we want, but what did we really learn? This is just a confirmation study. And so the problem with these residual-based likelihood functions is that they have a very poor diagnostic power. I have a likelihood value that is derived from a large number of data points. So I have 1,000 data points or 500, and I aggregate that in one value, likelihood value. So, and that doesn't tell me anything with what's wrong with the model. So we need to do that better. If I go to the doctor and I tell the doctor, doctor, I have pain in my leg or so, then the doctor asks, okay, what type of pain is it? Where is it situated? He asks me 4 or 5 follow-up questions and then he's diagnostically trained to know, oh, then this is what's going on. We are not very well diagnostically trained. When we see our model result and we see that it doesn't fit the data, we generally have no idea which component of the model is an error. So we have to do diagnostically much better. We need to figure out a way in which we can see, hey, if the model doesn't fit this part, then we know that this component of the model is in error. So that's what we came up with a new methodology called diagnostic model evaluation using approximate Bayesian computation. And what is ABC, or likelihood-free inference? Now imagine you have some observational data, this is time, this is the observation, could be anything. And instead of calibrating the model against the observation, what you do is that you summarize your data in something we call summary metrics. In this case I have 2 summary metrics. For instance, and I'm not saying that's the right summary metric, but for your own understanding, this is the mean of the data, so the mean of this data, and this is the standard deviation of the data. That gives me this red, what is it? A box. Okay? So combination of 2 metrics. You can take 10 metrics of the data. Mean and standard deviation are not very smart metrics because they have very poor diagnostic power. So you want to take metrics rooted in your theory that have proper diagnostic power. What you do then, you set a small box, and I don't have time to explain all that, that's statistical theory around this. And everything that falls in this interval is considered acceptable. So what do? Now I specify a prior distribution on my parameters. I draw samples from that prior distribution. I run each of those samples through my model. And I compute for each sample the simulated summary metrics. This was my observed. This is what I called. It needs to fall in this box to be called appropriate. So what you see, this one is not considered behavioral. This one is not. And this one is. And now you summarize your posterior from these simulations, the ones that you accept. So you fit your model using summary statistics. Now, we can apply it to the same model, hydrologic model. And what are my summary metrics? My first metric is the runoff index. Important metric for hydrologists, the annual runoff index. Another metric is the annual base flow index. Another important metric. I can also define a flow duration curve. So I disaggregate the stream flow time series over time. So I take the time element out of it, I sort the stream flow data, and I can define here an exceedance probability and here the stream flow. You see, the dots in red is the observed record, and the blue or the black line is the fitted record. And so I can define a function, which is actually Van Genugte function for those that recognize this. A flow duration curve looks very much like a retention curve with theta S set to 1 and theta R set to 0. And now these two metrics are summary metrics. I can derive S3 and S4 from the data. And for each model simulation I do, I can fit this FTC curve. So then I have four metrics, S1, S2, S3 and S4. And now I can calibrate my model. And then what I do is I actually look at the parameter distributions that I get out. And the point is that in this particular case, we immediately identified an epistemic error in this model structure with the fast flow component of the model. The model is not able to predict the different peak flow events. And that is because there's something wrong with this particular component of the model. It's the fast flow and another fast flow parameter. So you see that you get this really weird shape. So underlying premises, we should be looking at a diagnostics approach to model data evaluation. There should be much more emphasis on identification of epistemic errors, because that is when you learn something really scientifically new. Otherwise, we won't get beyond the point of just fitting our model to data, and we won't learn a lot. So, diagnostics, no residuals anymore. Thank you so much. Now, I don't have time to go over that, but we can sit down. In principle, you still define a box around the residuals. You have to define here, you have to define what you call statistically appropriate, okay? But what you can do is the following, if that's your problem. What you do is you can, if you have the statistics, you can compute those from the data, yeah? But you can compute one statistics for your entire data time series, or you divide your time series in different parts, compute the same statistics, and look at the standard deviation. So that already extracts more information. So you can define this box based on the standard deviation of the statistic in the real data. And then you look with your model for all those samples, posterior, or all those parameter combinations that give the exact same behavior. The problem is, if we focus on residuals, residuals are corrupted by input data errors. Summary statistics are not. You can design summary statistics to be insensitive to forcing errors. That's the underlying, they're more stable. And residuals, they'll always be corrupted by input data errors.
Okay, thank you very much.